email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, in the early 1970s, an English couple, Peter and Harriet Cornish, came to West Cork with a dream of founding a place of refuge. And what happened next is the subject of a new documentary called Chasing the Light. It charts the growth of a Buddhist centre on the Berry Peninsula and what happened when the community, that community, came face to face with Buddhism's own Me Too movement. I'm joined now in studio by the director of the documentary, Maurice O'Brien. How are you doing, Maurice?
Hi, Ray.
And from London, in a studio, the daughter of Peter and Harriet, Professor Flora Cornish. How are you doing, Flora?
Hi, doing fine, thanks.
Great to talk to you. Your dad is the star of this documentary, as you would expect. A wise, lovely, loving, compassionate man. Was that your experience of him?
I suppose it was. But of course, growing up, you know,
Was that a tough first question for you?
That is the toughest. Look, that's the toughest question.
Is it? All right. Well,
Look, he was, of course, he was a super wise man. The film is gorgeous, you know, captures him like that. But we had to kind of face the fact in school that we had a very different arrangement.
Upbringing,
at home.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
As an adult looking back, you can see the benefits of that. But I suppose as a child, you want to fit in.
That's it.
Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the funny thing is we did fit in. My brother and I went to the Cahirmore National School, and we had legendary teachers who, you know, they taught us a love of the Irish language, local history, nationalist Irish songs that, you know, we sang, you know, heartily, learning about 800 long years of English oppression. And we never were once made to feel, or did we think, hold on, are we the English?
What age were you when you came to West Cork?
Oh, I was born there.
Yeah, well, then you weren't. Yeah. You weren't English. Yeah. Your parents were English.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the dream was, both your mum and your dad, to set up this place of refuge. Was it always planned that it would be a Buddhist refuge?
I think when they came, they were escaping what they saw at the oil crisis of the early 1970s.
Right.
And they had two interests, I think. One being kind of sustainability. Can you live a sustainable, quiet, ecologically sound life? And then the other, I think, was Buddhism and so on. And they did begin with farming. You know, they tried goats, cows, sheep, you know, the whole lot. And I guess eventually kind of settled on the Buddhist centre angle.
OK, so we'll just play a clip of your dad remembering arriving on the Berry Peninsula, and then we'll have a chat with you, Maurice. So this is Peter Cornish.
Harry and I were both interested in the same things which brought us together. Self-sufficiency and the spiritual side of things. And I told her about my dream. She had some money and she said, look, why don't we go and find a place? So we came over here to West Cork in August 73 and drove around just knocking on doors. We came around the corner and saw this vast view of the Atlantic Ocean. And it was like the first morning of the world, like no one had ever been there before. We knew there and then that was it, this is the place we were looking for.
And they fell in love with the Berry Peninsula, as many people do, and you did, Maurice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what was your first encounter?
Well, I went down to Sogdian Bera nearly 6 years ago now to do a week-long silent retreat, you know, just completely burnt out from work. And had heard about this place, had never done anything like a week-long silent retreat before, said I'll go down and give this a go, and was just absolutely blown away by the setting. You know, for me, it's one of the most beautiful, it is probably the most beautiful bit of Ireland. And where this particular centre, where Peter and Harriet began to build on the kind of ruins of an old farm on the side of a cliff, you know, looking out towards the Mizzen Head is just absolutely amazing. And it's kind of a perfect place to build a meditation centre, because just looking out at the sky, looking out at the horizon, you know, which is kind of halfway up the skyline is like a meditation in itself, you know. But I suppose for me, just during the course of that week doing the meditation course, I was blown away by the other people on the course and the mix of people that were there, and the fact that people had come from the UK and America to actually be there and take part in the course. You know, there was people that had suffered bereavements. There was people that had just been given a diagnosis. There was, you know, screen burnt teenagers and people like myself. And we were all just there looking for something, you know, trying to get a little bit deeper in our own lives, I suppose, as opposed to just skimming along the surface all the time.
And Flora, when were you aware that there were strangers arriving to do meditation? When did it come from something sort of casual to something more organised?
When was it? Was it around, was it the late 80s?
Right.
When we were sort of younger, there were meditation sessions happening. That was kind of the first bit, with local people coming to the Shrine Room to do for meditation sessions. And so the great thing was those parents brought their children with them.
Uh-huh.
So it was a regular Saturday evening, I think. And we'd have a big gang of youngsters. Sometimes, you know, in the winter we'd watch Star Wars, and in the summer we'd play, you know, big games outside with big gangs of people. So that was brilliant fun. And then I think in the late 80s, it sort of started to form into more formally a Buddhist centre with retreats, people coming for a longer time, and teachers coming from around the world.
Yeah. And just the geography of it, so it's out the road, as they say here, out the road from Castletown Bear on the way to Alahees. If you take a left there, you'll find it.
Yeah, just before the Dersey Island cable cart, which is the furthest on the island of Ireland that you can get from Dublin. So many backbreaking 5-hour drives down and there and back for the filming over the course of 5 years. Yeah. But it was definitely worth it when you get there.
It's an odd thing. I was just telling Morris before we went on air, Flora, that as a younger man in my 20s, I happened down to Castletown Beara and had a bike on the back of the car, and I cycled the Ring of Beara. And I remember it was one of those things that changed my life. And I'm not a spiritual or religious person, but I always said to people that whenever I did it, it was good for my soul. And did you appreciate that where you were on the planet, that there was something special about it?
Great question. I honestly did not
No.
until I went away. I remember I went away to university, and I remember for the first time coming around, driving around the corner and seeing as you come over the hill, you know, and you see the sea and the vastness of the sea and the sun sparkling. And it hit me like as if it was the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh my goodness, that's what they've been going on about all this time.
Yeah, yeah. And then your dad thought that as it became more formalized, I suppose, less casual, that they would have to make it into a charity, and that had its own ramifications, Morris.
Yeah, so I mean, Peter, you know, was never interested in being a teacher, and amazingly, kind of in an amazing act of kindness, he, you know, built all of these buildings. And it must be said that Peter was essentially half blind, you know, but he was building all these buildings that would become shrine rooms by hand himself on the side of a cliff. And
with no formal training.
With no formal training. And basically decided to gift this land and the buildings as a charity, so that, you know, it could be of benefit to people in the world. And, you know, so they and the person that became the spiritual director then was a teacher called Soigal Rinpoche, who
Soigal Rinpoche. And that name is important.
It is important, yeah. I mean, he.
No,
would,
we won't go there yet.
Yeah.
We won't go there yet. Because
yeah.
I said he'd no formal training. And Flora, there's a lovely piece, a bit of archive footage in the documentary of your dad explaining how he used the horizon as a spirit level. That's.
I know.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
It's just brilliant. And he was one of the things about Dad, he would find a way to make it work. You know, that's one of the things. If you said no, you can't do it. He wanted to get a grant to plant trees, and it's so barren and it's so windswept. The area is not that, you know, you cannot get that grant. But he planted the trees. 25 years later, they're massive. You know, they make space for more trees to be planted. And he just figured out a way of making it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he only died last October.
That's right.
Yeah. And you were lucky enough, Morris, to get him to talk, because he had become a sort of a hermit, hasn't he, in the later years?
Yeah, it was a great privilege to spend time with Peter, because he had become this slightly enigmatic figure that everybody knew had founded the place, but had essentially gone into full-time retreat himself, was living up on the cliffs, but wasn't really, you know, not many people would see him. And so I had picked up, he wrote this beautiful autobiography called Dazzled by Daylight, which I read when I was down on the retreat. And I was like, my God, this story is incredible. And why isn't it better known? And so we managed to coax him out of hermithood.
How did you do that?
Well, I think with the help of the directors down there, you know, and the fact that I had been down there doing a retreat, they could see that I was coming from a genuine place, you know, that I was genuinely interested in the teachings and the story of the place. And I think it was just my curiosity. I was just dying to know more about him and about his story and about his motivations. And luckily he had the patience to put up with, you know, our endless intrusions and endless questions. And it really was, it was probably the best bit of making the film, was actually getting to spend that time with him.
And Flora, do you think your dad retreated from the world because of Soigal Rinpoche?
I don't think so, to be honest. No. I think he, that, you know, you described him as a hermit, but there's a lovely bit in the film where he says, people call me a hermit, but I'm not a hermit. I just live on my own and don't see anybody. I loved that bit.
Yes,
because
yeah.
He honestly was very unassuming and humble, you know, and I think that comes across well. And I think he thought it was an important story to tell. That's why he was.
Because it's his story. It's the story of Jogchen Bera and the story of Soigal Rinpoche. So let's get to his story now. So he was a Buddhist teacher who arrived in West Cork.
Well, he was invited. I mean, you know, so it should be said that when Peter and Harry came over, obviously in the 70s, it's 1974, it's the height, you know, it's Catholic Ireland, as Peter says in the film. You tell people that you're setting up a Buddhist retreat centre and they just think you're some kind of cult. In fact, they used to be referred to as the Muslims on the Hill, because people were just so unfamiliar with Buddhism. They knew something about Islam, but nothing about Buddhism. So he, and again, because Peter just had no interest in power or being a teacher, they felt it was very important to root the place in a lineage so that it wouldn't become a cult. And so they invited one of the very few Tibetan Buddhist teachers that was teaching in the West at the time, Soigal Rinpoche, to come. And the fact that they kind of were able to bring this teacher to West Cork in the 1980s was a real coup at the time, was seen as a real coup. And then, you know, it was kind of great.
And you have brilliant footage of him doing what he does, teaching. Mm. And then he wrote a book, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, which became this global hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sold 4 or 5 million copies. I mean, you know, blurbs from Richard Gere, John Cleese, the audiobook. It's hard to underestimate how big that book became, and it made him the most famous Tibetan Buddhist in the West after the Dalai Lama.
And how important was he to the West Cork setup, Flora?
He was important. I think he was officially the spiritual director of Dzogchen Bera, the Buddhist center. But there was a range of different teachers who were kind of regularly part of the whole, you know, coming and going, giving teachings.
But he was the star, and he was this larger than life character. Did you have much interaction with him?
I didn't have much interaction with him. We had quite an adjacent sort of a life, but there was one moment that kind of honestly stuck with me, and it was when I was about 11 or 12. I was just helping to set up before a retreat, and they were setting up the shrine that had these little brass bowls of rice and water and things. And there was one that was empty, and he asked me to get a jug of water to fill this little brass bowl with water. I went off and got the jug half full of water, brought it back, and he said, "This is not good enough. Fill it up full."
What age were you?
I was 11 or 12, I think.
Right, okay.
And it rubbed me up the wrong way. You know, I felt, this is irrational. Why are you asking me to do this? You know, I felt it was, in hindsight, I felt it was sort of a kind of a power play. Mm. Somebody could say, you know, you might say he's teaching you to, if you're going to do a job, do it properly. But I sort of, it's the thing that sticks with me. I didn't like it.
Right. And it's D-Z-O-G-C-H-E-N, Dzogchen,
yes.
Which means great perfection. Did you know that?
I do now.
Yeah, you do now, right. And that's the name of the Buddha Centre in West Cork. So he was the man, and people flocked to hear what he had to say. And then he became this global star. And then in 2017, it all fell apart from Morris.
Yeah, I mean, so as you say, you know, he had established centres all around the world. His organisation, RIGPA, had, you know, massive centres in the States, in France.
Australia.
Yeah. And he would still come back to Beira for a couple of weeks each year. But, you know, it certainly wasn't the kind of centre. He was essentially kind of touring the world all the time. But yeah, in 2017, a letter was published by a group of his close inner students who essentially accused him of years of emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse. And so RIGPA, his organisation, has commissioned an independent report to look into these allegations, and the legal firm that was looking into them essentially upheld pretty much all of the most serious allegations. So it more or less brought his worldwide empire, you know, crashing down in a way. And the organisation itself, he stepped down as the spiritual director. They brought in, you know, codes of conduct, reconciliation process. But for the people that were devoted to him and, you know, thank him, would thank him for kind of changing their lives for the better, it was obviously a seismic moment for them, you know.
And you speak to some people in the documentary and they're... Like, they completely appreciate what he did for them and completely appreciate the harm he did, and they can't reconcile the two. They find it very difficult.
Hmm. Yeah, we tried to get at that nuance in the film, because I think it's so easy these days to be kind of black and white about things. And so I have to say, the people in the film were very honest about that in the way that they spoke about it, in the way that they had read the report, they had seen what these people were saying, you know, a lot of vulnerable women and the descriptions of the horrible things he had done to them. And yet they had to admit that they still had this gratitude to him, that they still had this connection to him, you know. And I suppose it's a question we wrestled with a lot, you know, can you separate the teacher from the teachings?
What do you think?
Oh, God, I think it's really, really complicated. I mean, me personally, having had to read that report quite a few times, you know, I do struggle to I struggle to reconcile that.
Terrible abuse of power.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately what we see time and time again.
Do you know that thing that, you know, like Buddhist teachers don't become abusers. Abusers become Buddhist teachers.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's what some people would say. In other words, he... You know, he was the man he was and got into a position of power so he could abuse people.
It's a really complicated issue, and I think there's been a lot written about this. You know, there's been two documentaries made about Sogyal Rinpoche and his, you know, and his behavior, one in the Netherlands, one in France, I think. And so this has been delved into in great detail. And you know, you could look at things like, again, this was the first wave of Buddhists Tibetan Buddhists to arrive in the West. Mm. He was coming, he had suffered a traumatized background. He had, you know, kind of grown up with the Chinese invasion of Tibet, had to flee his country. And so they're carrying all that as well. And then they come to the West and they're suddenly, it's the 60s and they're kind of, they're, you know, they find themselves in this completely different culture, and people are grabbing on to Buddhism as this new cool thing to get into. And I hope I'm in no way trying to make excuses, but you know, it's a complicated background. But I think for sure, you know, one thing that was clear for me in the making of the film, when you contrast, I suppose, Peter and Sogyal, Peter's just refusal of wanting any power, because as he says towards the beginning of the film, that idea that power corrupts, and
absolute,
you know, Sogyal
corrupts absolutely,
exactly,
yes,
and Sogyal accrued a lot of power as he became richer and more famous, you know.
How did the revelations affect your father, Flora?
he was heartbroken, honestly. He worried, you know, had he set up something that allowed all of this to happen? Did he call, you know, was it all causing more harm than good? Was it all going to, should it all come to an end? So I think he was really heartbroken, but he believed in the potential of the place, all the other good people who are around. You know, there are many, you know, and hundreds of people who, you know, are invested in the place and making it work and with all the best intentions and, you know, willing to make changes and so on. So I think he said we've got to trust the place, the people we have. And I think he felt that it was coming through this whole scandal and it was something he could believe in.
Mm. He says in the documentary that, you know, he feared his dream had become a nightmare. And there is that thing when you change the path of people's life and it ends up in a bad way, that there is, you must feel a responsibility. Well, what I mean there is that, you know, by setting up the centre and people coming there and then maybe, and there was no allegations from West Cork, was there, Maurice?
As far as we know, you know, there has been, we spoke with the expert that's leading the reconciliation process for the organisation RIGPA, and he certainly wasn't aware of anybody directly involved in Cork. And again, Sergal Rinpoche was only there for, I suppose, a couple of weeks each year, you know. But still, obviously, the fact that he was the spiritual director, I think having that connection, you know, for Peter, the idea that vulnerable people, you know, his whole idea, his whole dream was to build this refuge, this safe place where people could be held, where vulnerable people could go to find help and find kindness. And so anything that might be seen to be putting that at risk was terrible for him, you know.
So the documentary Chasing the Light is in cinemas now. Do you think that maybe somebody may see your documentary and it might trigger them to come forward? Is that a possibility?
It is a possibility. It's you look, it's something that we've talked about a lot. It was something that we wrestled with so much during the making of the film, thinking about all this and, you know, trying to do our best due diligence and speaking with the people, as I say, leading the reconciliation efforts and speaking with the directors and, you know, and the work that they've been doing as well was quite reassuring in terms of just absolutely making sure that this will never happen again and that people can go there and feel safe. And, you know, you don't have to be a Buddhist and you will still go there and get a huge amount out of going there. But yeah, I mean, this is the thing when you kind of, for us, ultimately we wanted the film to be about hope and about going back to Peter's original vision. And but we had to kind of poke under the rocks as well, and we had to look at the dark bits because, unfortunately, you know, there isn't any light without darkness as well.
It's odd, and this might seem like a bit churlish and a bit petty, but there was a man, Saigal Rinpoche, preaching about ego and vanity and that sort of thing, and there he was dyeing his hair. Now you might think that that's nothing, but to me that was a telltale sign. And I didn't know the story. And the first time I saw him in your documentary, and you weren't foreshadowing because this was footage you had from, you know, from the, was it the 80s, 90s, where he was, I didn't like him immediately. I don't know why. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, he was, you know, he divided opinion. He continues to divide opinion. Part of his teaching style was this crazy wisdom style, and it was all about, it kind of, you know, the way he kind of would say it was about shoving people out of the norm. It was about abusing the ego. And for some people, that really, really worked.
Okay.
And for others, obviously, it was the last thing.
And Flora, have you been back to West Cork recently? Do you visit?
Oh, yes. I go every summer, often at Christmas, in between.
So tell us what's there now. There's the Wellness Centre. Which has that lovely circular room, which with these huge windows looking out at the Atlantic Ocean, which would be good, you know, without anything, just sitting in that room must be good for you. And is the temple complete?
The temple is complete. Yes, it had a kind of formal openings this summer. And it's up and running.
And the wellness, that's the spiritual care centre, and that specifically built for, again, people that might have, you know,
after your mum's death, wasn't it? That Peter decided to build this place.
After the death of, Flora. After Harriet's, early death from cancer, and this beautiful idea to build this centre where people that had, you know, been given a diagnosis or had just suffered a grievance could go and be cared for and could, you know, hopefully pick up something of value from these ancient Buddhist teachings about life and about death.
Yeah. I think it has survived beyond the baddie, so to speak. What I got from it was, and it's where we started, that Peter Cornish was the star and he was the wise one. And I know he never wanted to be a teacher, never wanted to have power, but his words are words of wisdom. So we leave it with his words from the end of the documentary. It's Chasing the Light and it's appearing in selected cinemas around the country. Morris, so it's in iCinema in Galway. This is from the 13th of December, which is next Friday. The Arc Cinema and Omniplex Man Point in Cork, and in Dublin, the IFI, the Lighthouse and Dundrum.
Great. Spot on.
And it'll appear telly at some time in the future.
Sometime
on a streamer.
In the future.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, Morris, on a great documentary. And Flora Cornish, thanks so much for coming into a studio in London. And stay on there till we hear the wise words of your dad. And then we'll say goodbye, I suppose. That's the best thing to do.
I just see human beings as being so brave, running the gauntlet of life. And there's an almost overwhelming feeling of love wells up. The only thing that matters is being kind to people and realizing that we're all in this together.
The late Peter Cornish. Flora, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Morris.
Thanks,
thank
Ray.
You. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.